So this morning, our session is our two Microsoft engineers, that's us, build blockchain enterprise applications. So the two of us today, we've got Kale Teeter.
Hello.
Hello.
So if any of you are using some of the cool stuff that we have up on Azure inside of Visual Studio Code, Kale is part of the product group. So the product group are the ones that started Microsoft that build all the cool tools that everyone can use. Me, I'm in a different section of Microsoft called Commercial Software Engineering. So I go out and I work with Microsoft's largest 500 customers, and our division helps them do really cool shit using the stuff that they do. So we go out and work with these customers. So what I do is I help these big customers go and build blockchain applications. So this session is a mixture of me going through some of the architecture that I use, some of the architectures that I use when I'm creating these enterprise applications, what do we talk to these enterprises about, how do we architect it. Click over to Kale, he'll walk through some of the Visual Studio tooling and how that can be used to accelerate building blockchain applications. We'll flip back to me and I'll cover off, now that you understand some of those building blocks, how we can go and compose these together having a typical application. So, let's cover off the one that I usually get at conferences like this, which is usually, why the fuck do we need public, private blockchain? If we have public, everything should be public. So, cover for you all, should already know, public Ethereum, we can't trust anyone. So because of that, the security things that are built into it are all around just assuming that everyone is trying to dick us over. So everyone is controlling their own keys, we've all got trustless infrastructure because we don't know who the bad actors are. So everything has to be security around the bad actors trying to do things to us. Which is okay, but when we're inside of a private network, we have different security considerations to worry about. And usually with the web UI and application front end, usually this type of stuff is deployed out to a decentralized file system. Now, that's great for that type of scenario, but for consumer-to-consumer apps, that's great. Or inside of the enterprise space, these are usually the three things that they're worried about. Enterprises think that they have really, really large transaction volumes, so they always say public Ethereum, public blockchains can't handle our transactions. We want to do something faster. So because we have different security considerations, we can relax some of these things. So we can go and move to things like proof of authority, where we can get some of these high transaction volumes. So that's one consideration, but it's usually not the main reason that we end up using private chains. The two main reasons are usually scared of the unknown. We've got large enterprises with all of their developers, and they want to go do something blockchain-y, but they're afraid of failing. And they don't want to fail publicly, because that would be bad. So they want to have a nice safe space that they can go deploy some things, play with it, get the developers through the motion of how to build these things. And then once in a few years, once they're more happy, then they'll start moving into the B2C space. The other one is maturity of private transactions. A lot of the things that these enterprises are doing in a B2B scenario is commercially sensitive. And right now in public Ethereum, doing some of these private transactions is harder. Now there are some cool things happening with ZK Snarks. Ernst & Young have just released Nightfall. So we're looking at Nightfall to help integrate Nightfall into some of what we're doing. But as it is, these are the three main reasons why we end up using private networks. So if we look at a private enterprise network, it kind of looks like this. So instead of having unknown actors, we've got a private controller. So we know who the actors are. And because of this, we can relax some of these security considerations just a little bit. So it goes from trying to do this in a trustless, decentralized way to more of a, how can we go and use a blockchain as a shared source of truth so we've all got the same understanding of what the data is. And for that, they now are able to accelerate the business-to-business applications. So another reason why we do it like this, they have their three separate deployments. Each enterprise has their own backend, etc. is because although they're going to be here with a common goal, hey, we want to be able to track these widgets more efficiently between us. How company A want to do all their reporting is going to be completely different. How company B want to have their internal internet application hooking up to all of this. Now, that's a well and good. So, typically how an engagement happens when I get called in is we talk to the enterprise, and when we ask them, do you know about blockchain? They always go, yeah, I read Forbes magazine, I know all about the blockchains. And so because they are a large traditional enterprise, they've got all of their legacy applications created. So they've usually got a traditional multi-tier application. So if we go with a typical thing, it'll be one really large company with multiple vendors which go and interact with them. So making up names, these are not real companies. Let's just go with Walmart, because everyone knows that, and suppliers to Walmart. So typically what would happen, Walmart's the largest player in this space. All of the suppliers are going and supplying packages to them. But because Walmart's a big player in here, they can go and dictate to all of these other players. All of you are going to log into our front-end web portal. All of you are going to update into there. So Walmart in the back end have their business tier. They've got their data tier of a database, their traditional three-tier application. And they might have some analytics and reporting and stuff. So because I've already got all of this legacy enterprise infrastructure, that almost every single time that failed, they go, we want to make this more secure by making it on blockchain instead. So all they do is they take that database and they replace that with blockchain. They go, it's now more secure because it's on blockchain. And we tell them, no, you've just made it worse. You've taken the worst parts of both. So all that they've got now is their exact same application, which is now a whole lot slower than what their SQL database was. And everything is now behind a firewall. So none of these parties can even access that blockchain. So I asked them, who else is going to host this blockchain? No one. We control the blockchain. It doesn't work like that, guys. So then we say, okay, so if you're not going to even let them host it, then are you going to let them have like a direct endpoint to the blockchain so they can at least verify? Oh, no, it's behind our firewall. So you guys are running a blockchain, you're running the blockchain, you're the only one hosting the node, and it's hidden behind a firewall that no one can access. So you can't prove anything. Because right now, it may be secured in a blockchain, but they can't tell. Because whenever it comes here in transit, it can still be modified in any of these data tiers before it gets up to here. So the biggest thing that, the biggest challenge we have with enterprises is that education around every single party has to be able to access the blockchain directly to verify it. If you're still going through a centralized access point like this, then it has absolutely no value. Which is always a big struggle because the largest player here wants to still lock down and control everything. So trying to get them to understand you can't control the blockchain, everyone needs to host it, that's usually a scary thing for them. So the common mistakes I usually see, what we just saw. They have a three-tier application, they're used to, they are the ones who control everything, host everything for the industry. They want to use the blockchain as a database to try and get them moving their mindset out of we have a database that we control to we have a shared state, a shared understanding between all parties. That's the biggest mind shift. But once we get them through that, it usually takes about 2 days. Once they do it and it clicks, then you can see them get excited because now they understand the possibilities of it. And this is still a big problem. The largest company usually still wants to control it. That's more of a business problem. So how we go about helping to educate them, we get them to go that blockchain is the source of truth. So it's no longer your back-end systems are the source of truth. What is in the blockchain is the source of truth, which again is another mindset shift for enterprise developers. Get them to understand that their back-end systems are going to react to what just happened in the blockchain via oracles. That again is another mindset shift. So trying to tell them nothing's confirmed until you've sent it into the shared state. The shared state is updated and it's come back via an Oracle, so you can update your backend and your reporting systems. Ninja Tide controls their own infrastructure. This one is from where we've seen many projects fail. Would have one company inside of an industry say, we're going to go and create the blockchain for supply chain, the blockchain for Apple, the blockchain for whatever. So every time we've seen one company say, we're going to create the blockchain and then we're going to roll it out to our partners, it has failed every single time. I've never seen that work. The way that we've seen it work is when they get us engaged, we'll go in and we'll say, we're only going to be working with you if you bring in at least two other parties for our next meeting. Once we go in there, we've got at least three companies who are going to be part of that initial development, that initial deployment, then we started seeing these be a lot more successful. Because at that point, we do have three companies who have all had their input into the business processes, into the development. It's been deployed out to their three their Azure subscriptions, so it gets rolling on from there. And most importantly, everything that we're teaching them is applicable to public blockchains. So everything we're teaching them around key security, around dApp development, oracles, etc., works inside of the private space, but my secret agenda is to get them all upskilled so that once they're happy within the B2B space, they can take everything that they've learned and start doing things in B2C and public Ethereum. So we're talking to them around, sure, we could have a private network, but why not make it a plasma chain so it's connected to the public network so we can do some more things easier from there. So change that conversation over to plasma chains is working well. So once we've gotten past that point, and now we're talking about architecture, there's a few little pieces that we use. So I'm going to go through some of the serverless pieces that we usually use. I'll flip over to Cal for demo a bunch of stuff, then we'll go back to me to continue this. But to connect the glue between the blockchain side and the traditional enterprise backends, we've got some glue in the middle. So we've got two of them, which are serverless-based programming. We've got Azure Functions, which is functions as a service. So take a piece of code and it will run as a serverless style. So that's great. We've also got Logic Apps. Logic Apps, I've got another screen in a second. So it is serverless compute, but you don't have to write code. You can just drag in building blocks. And then the last one is Event Grid, which is an enterprise pub sub. So that's a great way of publishing, hey, something happened in the blockchain, it out to your enterprise event grid, then any backend system that cares that something happened in the blockchain, we can subscribe to those events and then do something. So update the reporting because a widget was just transferred. So we use the so these two and that. So between these two, if we have to do some tricky custom stuff, we use functions. But anything simple, we usually just go with Logic Apps because we can get them done in 1-2 minutes. So Logic Apps are building blocks. You click and drag things on there. So it's great because when we jump to an enterprise, we can build out entire demos in 2-3 days by using simple building blocks. We can just have, when a smart contract event happens, so like an Oracle, sit there and monitor. When something happens, go and do something. In this case, send an email. So get anyone to do one of those, hit go, and deploy out. Inside of it, these Logic App connectors, we can do a few things. We've got triggers, so like oracles when something happens. So we now have serverless, codeless, enterprise oracles, which is pretty cool. And action, what to do when something happens. So we can trigger a smart contract deployment. We can trigger executing a functional smart contract. We can do a call on a transaction and pull back properties from smart contracts. So typically this is what it looks like. If I want to read or write to a blockchain, it's usually this. So what I love doing with developers, with new teams, I get them to code out a smart contract to deploy it. So that takes them a few minutes, as we'll see Cal do. And once I've done that, we can just go and enable them to go and trigger these smart contracts. So just click dragging, HTTP endpoint, click drag, go and call the smart contract, click drag, do a HTTP response, passing back a JSON payload. And so that takes about 5 minutes, and then the prior developer started building some things. So that one's for reading and writing, and then we have those serverless oracles. So you just copy and paste in the smart contract address, select which event you want, because it's got that from the ABI, and then say what you want to do. Go and update your SQL database, publish it out to the suppliers, event grid will help stuff. So,
So yeah, I'm going to talk a little bit about, as David said, on the engineering team working on developer experience. And one of the big things we've been doing there is Visual Studio Code, so improving developer productivity, making this a much easier process for new users, but also not trying to get in the way of advanced users. So somebody who knows what they're doing with these tools, we want to make sure that that still is frictionless. But we want to break down the walls for like new users, somebody coming into this ecosystem. Sometimes it's not quite as approachable as you might think. So looking at the current developer experience, there's obviously some development component there, as David mentioned. Things like writing smart contract, build your app. But along with that then becomes the second block, which is a huge kind of area for a new user to say, what do I use to build this app? In many ways, we've had that with other frameworks and programming languages before, but the blockchain specifically is very open source in nature. There's a lot of awesome tools out there, and there's some things that maybe aren't so awesome, right? So people trying to find the right tool for the right job has been a struggle. We've seen a lot with people using these. So one of the motivations for even getting into developer experience was, can we improve that process, make it easier for people to get their job done? And then they can grow and learn as they're building new stuff, so they can go faster. The second thing was, how can we hook this up to infrastructure? So if we're deploying to a public node or a private node, we want to break that wall down too. A lot of times we did these hackathons early on in the last few years, and I can tell you that where the stumbling blocks happen is not coming up with ideas and getting things there. It'll be like, how do we do a transaction? Like, everybody knows the theory of like how this happens, but when the rubber meets the road and they have to use Web3.js or they have to use some of these tools, they start getting confused right away, and then things start to fall apart and they lose productivity. And so one of the things there was, how can we connect these ledgers in a much more seamless fashion, and then also help in the deployment. So as you are starting to put new things out there, people are starting to get used to immutable smart contracts and transactions. How can we help that process as well? So those are the main motivations for why we even got involved in this. So from an integrated development experience, if you look at the left side of this and we move to the right, on the left side, we basically are saying, like, in most languages and in most programming structures that we have the idea of a create new project, right? Not just a hello world, but like letting me scaffold out a real structure that I would actually use. I don't just want some example or something like that. I just want to get started and do my thing. So this is one piece we wanted to nail. Creating ledgers. How can we do that from inside the IDE? Another issue that comes up is there's a lot of different service providers. Azure's a big one, but there's many other ones, right? And so it's like, okay, I need a ledger after I create my stuff, then I got to bounce out to a website. There's Facebook, and there goes my productivity, right? Keeping someone engaged in the IDE is really beneficial for the programmer to stay involved and say, like, I just want to go deploy this, okay, I keep my same mindset. If I start context switching, I got issues. So then I can't get my job that fast. And the automatic configuration, as I mentioned before, so we want to take what we're building, take where we're going to deploy it to, and help build that configuration on the fly for you, so that you don't have to like waste your time with configuration files. Certainly they're there, and you can go tweak them and do what you need to, but most times you just want to get through it. Let's get this thing running and see what's broken, see how I can get this thing improved. The middle box is the IDE, and part of this is like Microsoft and bringing our IDE, like a Visual Studio Code in this example, is one aspect of it, but trying to like take over this market and say, we're going to build the best debugger, we're going to build the best packager. This is not something that's going to happen, right? Because there's such a huge community around this that's building awesome stuff. And so really we see ourselves as more of a connecting tool to say, who are the best guys doing these things, or who are the most popular ones that we can work with, and get them integrated, help them get their stuff integrated there so that we can build a better tool. And so in this case, one of the first ones that we worked with was Truffle. We've got a great relationship with Tim and the group there. We work very closely with Consensus and Visual Studio Code with Juan Blanco. We work very closely with the Ethereum Foundation on Remix. And there's others that are not mentioned here, so we've been actively working with the foundation to bring even more of the people building dev tools into this ecosystem. So if there's anybody in here building dev tools, certainly come see me at the booth or my group and talk to us, because we're very interested. We want to make sure that as we're building this tooling, we're doing it in such a way it's not like tightly coupled to one of these kind of frameworks. We'd much rather it be open and let people have choice and just help the user get started. And then on the right side is basically the ledger technology. So like after we build something, then we have a cool IDE to actually do it. Where are we deploying these things to? Certainly one of the things to get started, and if I'm on a plane or if I'm disconnected, I want to do something local. I don't want to have to go spin up a huge network and waste a bunch of money just to see if my smart contract's working functionally. If I want to run my automated tests, or you know, some of the other vendors we're working with, like MythX, some of the security vendors, we want to make sure that stuff's all working and we can test that stuff on local dev before we even go out to a big chain to do something, whether it be private or public. We mentioned the private consortiums. And this tool is not tightly coupled to Azure. Certainly Azure's a nice experience in here, but certainly you could also plug this into existing nodes if you had them running on premises or something of that nature. So don't think of this. I did hear some feedback. People say, well, it's got Azure in there, and that scares me, you know, because I'm not into the cloud or Azure. This tool will work without Azure, right? Azure's just a great place to run your stuff. But if you just want to run this stuff locally, or you actually want to run it on premises, you can also use that as well. And which brings us to the third box, which is a service we announced in May, which is called the Azure Blockchain Service. So don't take away if you don't know anything about this. We're not building a ledger ourselves. So this is powered by Quorum, and essentially what this is for some users to say, I trust you enough so that you can run my nodes for me, just run my nodes for me as a PaaS service, as opposed to me having a VM that I have to maintain there and manage. You can still do the VM stuff, so people want to have their hands on all the internals and make sure that that works, totally fine, you can run that. This is something that's a little bit faster, so maybe you can even use it for dev test. Certainly in production, people want to use this because there's a highly available solution here. So basically, we're making sure those nodes are healthy and running. You can think about other services who do something similar where they're hosting the nodes for you. This is Microsoft's version of that. And then on the public side, you know, we talked about this because we don't want to build any barriers in here. Certainly, Microsoft's bread and butter is enterprise, and having these big enterprises engage in blockchain technology. But we also don't want to sever off anybody from the public side. They should also use this tool, and we want to make sure that it's amenable to them as well. And so on the public side, something we're launching this week that we haven't kind of talked about yet is working with Infura. So we've been working with them for some time, but we wanted to smooth that process out much more for Infura. So I'll show you what it looks like from the Azure Blockchain Service. Infura is nearly identical. So essentially, it's down to a couple clicks, and you can have yourself in Infura without having to jump to any other website, even if you're new to Infura. So we made some really nice integration there to make that work for public networks. And I know there's other vendors we've been talking to as well who also are in this, and we want to work with you guys too, because the architecture is built to plug other, you know, node providers into that. So this is kind of like our honeycomb, we call it, which basically looks like the stickers on people's laptops. But basically, just some of the key points I wanted to hit on. I hit on some of these earlier, but just hit on most of them. You know, we have the Azure Blockchain Service Integration Foundry project. We have all the language syntax and linting compilation, those things happening. We have a debugger built in there. You can see that as well. I'll show you that. Any kind of different chain that you want to deploy to. We're working on something for the fork chain. So if you guys are familiar with the work Truffle's been doing in that space, this is pretty interesting. So you could have your production environment, which could even be a public blockchain, or it could be a private one that's in production. You can essentially fork that chain, make your changes to your code, test it. Yep, everything's working. Destroy your fork, push your changes up to public, or push your new contract to public. So we want to automate that a little bit more. We definitely have it working. So the smart contract test execution I mentioned, some vendors we're working with there. We're also working with like some wallet vendors as well. Truffle's one of them. We've been working with them to improve the Truffle HD wallet experience. Also, Fortis is another one that we're working with in the wallet space to improve that. We also have these like Logic App flow integration. David was talking about some of these serverless things. I'll show you what we've done in Visual Studio Code to help that out. basically, if you build a smart contract and you want to like interoperate with it, we have a contract interaction, we call it, which basically builds a UI on the fly for you so that you can test your contract and start like playing with it to see if it's working. But then on top of that, you know, I want to wrap that in a serverless function. So the functions are really, these logic apps and functions are really just like CRUD operations to a blockchain, right? We want to send a transaction in, we want to read some data, we want to react to an event. It's pretty basic. So what we did in VS Code was said, well, if you built your smart contract out, we know what methods you have in there, so we can basically wrap that with a logic app, give you that as an output. You don't have to write any code. You can basically pop that into, you know, our logic app service. Business developers, what we call them, someone who doesn't write a lot of code, could even use that, because it's basically like connections that they're forming up there, so it's super easy to do that. The extension and this stuff, definitely see us if you need help finding it, but if you just search for Visual Studio Marketplace, blockchain, or Ethereum, you'll find it. This is a short link to it. We launched this back in May, and you know, got good feedback. It's all open source. You can go look at all our code up there. We do monthly builds right now, or monthly publishes. And like I said, this week we're doing one. I'll show you another vendor we're working with that we put some new stuff in for this one today. And then also, this is just the experience, but we'll walk through that in a second. And with that, I'm going to hop into actually doing some work here with the studio. Okay, so let me pop into a fresh console here. So this is just VS Code out of the box. For those who are getting started, if you just go download this tool and just go search for it, when you come in here, you can search for these. This is the little extensions. So these are things that augment the extension thing, and you can just type in blockchain, and you'll find a bunch of them in here, and we're like right here. I already have it installed. And so basically, once you install it, you'll see this little thing that comes up over here. Now, I already have one pre-connected here. This is one talking to Azure, but I'll explain what that is in a second. I basically opened a folder here. It's just empty right now, and I brought up the command palette. The command palette's like basically all the commands that we can do with these tools. Then we can add new ones to them, but right here's what we do right now. So we have our file new project. I'll show you a debugging transaction flow. We fully integrated the debugger into the IDE, so you can do all the step through, step out of. You can do the inspection, even down to the instruction level, so you can see all the IL and everything that's going on there. We do the deployments, the builds, you know, all the compilation that's happening there. We can connect and create new networks up here. I'll show you what those look like. We have some things for key management that you can do in there, and then some stuff with Ganache. So if we basically just do a new one, you can see when I do a new project. Now, if I was a user that doesn't know what the heck I'm doing, if I just keep hitting enter, I'm going to get a nice scaffolded out project. If I know what I'm doing and I want to go out and say, that, hey, there's another truffle box I want to use or something like that, I can do that as well. So in this case, I'm just going to take the default, put it in the same folder. We'll pray to the internet gods here. The network is not great here, but it's okay. I have the cooking show demo in case this fails. But basically what we're doing here is we've created a template. If you're familiar with truffle boxes, is one package format that we're using. And so basically we scaffolded out and put the right stuff out here for what people should be doing when they're doing one of these. So we have a basic, you know, project structure. We have, you know, our open source licenses and stuff in here, all the normal stuff that people would need. And then basically you can see as it went through, it just went and pulled this box down. It's already dissolving all the dependencies. So in our case, we're using a wallet. So we needed to install some node dependencies. So when you do this yourself, you'll see that it kind of hangs here as it's doing something. What it's doing is just going and getting all the packages that we need and doing it for you. Again, you can customize this. You can jump out to a terminal and do whatever you need to here if you're in the know and know what you're doing with this stuff. But if you don't know what you're doing, this will help you get to the good state. So we'll just give that a few seconds here and finish up. There it is. So as that finishes, basically we have our blockchain, Hello World. We have our migrations. We already have all the migrations set up for us. If we look at our Truffle config, let me minimize some things here. We automatically threw a development environment in here for you. We have Ganache baked into the IDE, so if you don't do anything else, it'll automatically just work in a disconnected fashion. We also inject the hardware provider, the HD wallet provider, and you'll see what that means here in a second when we start talking to other networks. So the first thing you'd want to do is just, you know, do a basic build. this is in preview, so you'll see a lot of these debug commands. Maybe you can minimize this, but we put this out here so that people can see what's happening there in case there's any breaks within this tooling while we're in preview. But basically, you can see it just did a compilation on our projects. And then if we do a deploy, you'll notice when we do a deploy, we basically get this little drop down here. Now what's cool about this, what we built here was, you can see it says from Truffle config.js. So basically in the Truffle config, remember we had that development one by default that we injected for you. And there's also one from the tree over here, because I already have one registered. So as I build up more of it here, right now Azure's here, you'll see if you're listed over here. You can also do local networks and things over here. And again, if there's any people in the audience who are working on Ledger infrastructure, we'd love to plug you guys in there as well. Architecture is very open, so we can just basically extend these. And then they basically show up for the user just as choices. So again, they didn't have to do anything. They didn't have to go get RPC endpoints and figure out like how to authenticate to those things. That's happening for them. And I'm happy to talk through that in detail. If you want to come by the booth, I can tell you how we're kind of doing that securely to make that work. But for instance, let's just go to the local Ganache. Let's say I just want to do something quickly because I'm a developer and just want to try this out. So you can see I do my deployment. We can see all our logs here. And we got our build folder, so everything came out. Now the next step we said was, well, once users get to this stage, you know, if they're a new user, they're like, well, that's great. Like, everything worked. How do I, like, work with this thing? I didn't build a dApp yet. I just want to, like, work with it. And so in this case, they could drop to a command line and do that, but then they're going to have to go read. And hopefully they know how to read, and they will read. But, you know, they're trying to get things done quickly. So we say, okay, we created this contract interaction page. Minimize some things. So this is a React application that's inside of here. It basically is then reading our contract. So this is dynamic. This knows what methods are in there. So there's only two methods in my contract, send request and send response. It has the deployment. So if I do multiple, this drop-down list will fill up. It also has a bunch of metadata, like where did this thing get deployed to from, all the address detail. You can copy and paste bytecode and API if you need them as you start building your application. So we thought that might be a good thing. And then you can actually interact with them. So if I said test request, I execute, you can see the state filled up. Now I'll show you in a second that it's not smoke and mirrors. That actually went to Ganache right now. And the way we'll do that is we'll do a debug. But you can also see if we get a response message. And you see that one filled in. So this is basically showing the state, and these are all your actions that are inside of there. Now I mentioned, like, this is not smoke and mirrors, so if we pull up our command palette again and go into a debug transaction, if you look really closely, maybe you can't see it in the back, but we give you a hint. These are all the transactions that have happened recently. And you can see there, this is send response, and this one was send request. I just did those two. So if you click on this, we'll basically launch a debug session for you. We'll enumerate everything back here at the transaction level, block level. You can get all those details. You can expand this stuff to your heart's content to look at it. If you start jumping in here with your function keys as normal, you'll see it was send response that we actually called there. You can see our response message. We can hover and see those. So really nice like debugging interface. It actually breaks down even into the instruction level, as I mentioned before. So if you're a public developer, you might be concerned about, you know, what's happening here, their store calls have, you can see all that stuff directly in the IDE here. So we think that's a pretty nice thing for users who are like trying to figure out what's broken in their contract really quickly from in the IDE. Cool. So we jump back to say, okay, our typical flow was we did something locally there, we've deployed it, everything seems to be good, now we're going to push another chain. Now in my case, I already connected to an Azure blockchain service. How I did that, I can connect to or create a network here. So if I say connect to, and let's say I did go to Azure, by the way, this week Infura will show up in the drop-down as well, so the same experience will happen for Infura. And then basically you can pick your subscription. In Azure, it's very context sensitive to a subscription and a resource group. In Infura, it would basically list your projects here, right? So you can pick your project that you had up there and get your endpoints back. In this case, it will see what consortiums are up there. In my case, I'm already connected to that one, so I could create a new one. It'll go out and do everything for me. I don't even have to go to any other portals or websites. It'll spin up the consortium for me. It takes a few minutes, so we won't do that right now. If you expand this, you'll see that we, in the context of Azure, we have our consortium, our member, and our transaction node. If you right-click on the transaction node, you can see we get to our RPC address. Again, if you're building an app, you typically need that. Like, as soon as you start like writing some JavaScript code or something like that, you're going to need that. You can just grab this and put it right in your clipboard. You can use it. get all the disconnect if we're not using this consortium anymore. It'll still keep it there, we're just basically disconnecting from it. The exact same thing happens with Infura, except for, and I wish I could show you here, but we're just publishing it actually right now. But it'll basically show you all the nodes underneath there for the different networks, whether it be Rockstream, Rinkeby, you know, Mainnet, those kind of things. Same experience. And then basically, whenever we go to deploy to that, it's the same process. So once this comes up on deployment, we would pick this guy. And if I pull up the Apple's window. Now, you'll notice in this case, whenever I hit a network that's not local, I need a mnemonic. So I can either generate a new one here, or I can use one that I have existing, which is here on disk. So we initially, to give you some feedback here, initially we wanted to make this super easy again for users to say, I don't even know what mnemonic is. They can generate their prompt over a file location, they can put it in a USB drive or wherever. It's not good enough, like from a security perspective. So what we've been doing is working with our Truffle HD wallet provider so that we can provide two options. One is have this an encrypted file wherever you want to put that thing. The other one is using a real HSM. So we have an HSM in Azure. There are others that exist out there. But basically you can choose to use an HSM to pull that mnemonic, that secret, so that it can't get compromised on the field disk. Something we're actively working on. But if I put a mnemonic in here and I look at my output window, you'll see it's a little bit slower because it's going over the network, but it'll eventually push this stuff. You can see we say deploying down here, and you can see it's deploying to a different network here, and eventually that will complete. So just make it super easy. I didn't have to write any code, any migrations, and I'm able to deploy directly to other chains. We think that's pretty cool for what people need to use here. Now another thing that's, while that's finishing up, on this menu, a couple things. One is we just talked about these logic apps. So this bottom menu section here is basically covering those things. So if I want to wrap one of these contracts in a serverless application, I can pick this. I can pick what I want to do. Logic app, flow app, Azure function. I'll give you a link to the documentation. You can look at how these things actually work. We would put a contract address, really. So this one's still deploying, but I can just say I'll put a fake one in for now. And then basically we'll pick, because this one's in Azure, where am I going to deploy this? And you can see it generated a logic app. Now what does that mean? It basically generated a bunch of JavaScript for me that already pre-fills everything in for me. So basically it went and looked at all my methods, looked at what state variables exist out there, it created a wrapper for that, and basically put that out in JSON, and I can version that now, put it in my source control, and then I can take that up to Azure. And it will build what David showed you on the screen before, there's that GUI, it'll build that automatically for you. So it makes it super easy for people to build applications, whether it be event-based or CRUD, like I want to read or create something inside of there. So the other thing that I know that you might have noticed whenever I was going through these menus really fast was, in your contracts, one of the things people want to do is, like, some of this stuff's already been solved, right? Anybody who knows these folks, Open Zeppelin, knows that they have a pretty nice set of libraries up there that people typically use for production applications that have been fully vetted, rock solid contracts for different things. And so we said, how could we improve that experience, right? So the typical flow we saw with enterprises was, I'll go do an NPM package, go ahead and pull all the Open Zeppelin contracts. The problem is that we saw with some of the customers was, why is it pulling down everything? Like, I just want to do an ERC20 or an ERC721, or I just need some math libraries. I don't need all this other stuff, so then I have to go delete it and make sure no one does an NPM install, so then I end up with stuff in my directory that I didn't want. One of the things we were talking to the Open Zeppelin guys about was, could we create like categories similar to what they have with their folder structure that selectively allow me to just pull these down and then resolve all the dependencies for me? So if I just want the math or the lifecycle stuff or the access control stuff, I can pull just those. And I'll show you what it looks like for a token here. So what this is actually doing is going and grabbing a specific version of the Open Zeppelin contracts, and it pulled down 15 files in this case, and I'll show you what they look like. But it also gives me this little more details thing here that I can click on, and this will take me directly to this rich documentation. So if I'm new to ERC20, I don't know what I'm doing, I can come up here. This will walk me through everything I need to know about what I'm doing with that. A couple other things that we're doing there is, you can see it downloaded the contracts, obviously. It resolved all the dependencies for these things. So anything that's, you know, these things have multiple dependencies inside each one of these. So that's happening automatically. It's also making them read-only. So one of the things, and in talking with Open Zeppelin was, you know, sometimes people inadvertently make changes to these then, and then that could introduce a security problem, and that's not good. And so we said, well, first off, we can make them read-only, but that's not good enough, right? Because somebody could just make them not read-only. So what we did is look at the actual commit hash and look at the file hash up in GitHub. And so we know for sure, so when we do a deployment, we actually check that. And so like every time somebody does a deployment, no matter where it is, we actually block it right now and say, someone changed one of the core contracts right here is the one that they changed, go fix it. So we won't let it go forward. We're thinking about letting them tweak that, but the model that Open Zeppelin has shared is really good, which is using inheritance as opposed to changing those core contracts. And so we want to kind of make a firm stance there to make sure people don't blow their leg off, you know, with this kind of stuff. So basically, this will automatically do a verification check now every time I do a deployment and make sure that no one changed these, and then I can start extending that. It also created the migration for me. So this is kind of cool too. Like we went and looked at what all the dependencies are and built the migration file for you. So again, you don't have to write any code. If you just downloaded it ERC20 and hit go, it will take care of everything and migrate it for you. I'll just be totally honest, there's a couple breaks in this. This is brand new. And some of those are around, like, some of the contracts actually need parameters to initialize themselves, like in the constructor or something. And so we're thinking about a better experience for that. Happy to hear feedback from anyone here, too. But we're thinking about integrating that as well to say, hey, in order to use the ERC20, I need to know what you want to name it or what the supply is or something like that. Then we can prompt them for that and then do it for them so that they don't have to dig around inside these contracts. And so I think that's pretty much all I wanted to show, and I'm happy that afterwards we can talk through anything here, and I'm happy to talk about the internal side of this stuff and how it works, and you know, like the new stuff's going live this week, so we're actually in the process right now of getting this published, and this will have the Open Zeppelin stuff in it, as well as the Infura stuff.
And this extension works on Windows, Mac, Linux?
Yeah, those three. Yeah, it's cross-platform, so over time. And do you want to jump into the slides?
Yeah, so that's something important. When I go and work with these customers, I'll usually have a bunch of, half the devs in the room will have Windows laptops, and the other half will have Mac laptops. So being able to have everyone using the exact same Visual Studio Code tooling with the same extension makes it easy for all the devs to have the same workflow.
Another thing I wanted to talk about, so beyond just like the scaffolding and stuff that we put out there today, there's also this thing, and people sometimes get confused because we're horrible at naming things, but it's okay, so I'll talk you through it. So basically the Azure Blockchain Dev Kit, part of that is this Visual Studio Code extension, but another part of it is this GitHub repo, this open source, that has a bunch of code samples up here, a bunch more advanced stuff on serverless functions. There's a lot of documentation to help you get started on all this stuff. So once you get beyond the initial stuff and you want to start diving into more of the complex flows, this is something cool to look at. The other side was last Ethereal, not the one in Tel Aviv, but before in Brooklyn, we actually did a first bounties project with Microsoft. Actually, we did a $20,000 worth of bounty, and basically what we did is proposed out 20 different projects for people to work on to build different things using our HSN, using some serverless functions. There's a whole slew of them. There's some around gaming and tokenization, and basically those are up there as well. It was super great response. We're super happy with working with Git to point on that, and it worked out really well. But we basically have this community-driven section now too. So we have the Microsoft samples that we're producing. We have the community-driven ones that we're, you know, kind of vetting and working with the community on, but happy to take more contributions up there if you guys, on either side, pull requests or welcome anywhere. The links are here, but you can come by our booth. I'll post them. I think that's David.
Okay, so for the last 15 minutes, I'm going to go and take everything that we've talked about and then try to remix into a few different things. So as I said, we dive in and everything that I do with the customers is exactly what Carol just showed you. So we show them from the beginning how to go scaffold out a brand new project, get them to learn how to add in a few functions into the smart contracts, show them how to debug, how to write unit tests. Oh yeah, you didn't show the unit testing. It's there. And once I've gotten through that, again, it's the getting what we've done on the blockchain glued up to what's happening in the enterprise. So I've run through how it works for a single member inside the consortium. Then we go zoom out and see how it looks when we can bring them all together. So for one enterprise, at the core of everything is Truffle and Visual Studio Code. So we use that to go do all the writing, the unit testing, debugging, all of that stuff. So they're doing that locally. They've got, this is their blockchain node. So from their blockchain node, we start doing things so that their backend's going to do what Cal was talking about with the CRUD. So here we've got those logic apps. So as Cal showed, I used to go and get them to do it by hand because it only took 5 minutes. Click, drag in, Visual Designer. But as Cal showed you, now it takes 10 seconds. You now just right-click the smart contract, say, please just generate it for me. Generates out that JSON file, which defines that logic app for you. So you can just go and copy and paste that logic app JSON file, now up into Azure, and bam, you now have your serverless CRUD to go into the blockchain. But once we've got that, then the enterprise can start hooking the things up to it. So they can have their intranet app, and the intranet app can just go and the enterprise devs, all they care about now is that they have a REST endpoint. So REST endpoint to go and do some reading and writing, pushing in the transactions. So there are things that we can do around locking this down through Azure configuration, so people outside the company can't access it. It's probably a good idea. But it helps them use this as just a standard REST endpoint, instead of worrying about Web3.js or JS and caring about signing transactions. So we do all of that signing and that inside of here. That way, when something happens on a SQL server, we can go and push that down so it updates the blockchain. We'll keep on doing this stuff. Azure Function and other things happening. Power apps. So same thing, how we showed how you can do codeless serverless. We've got codeless UI. So we can go and just scaffold out a really quick prototype within a week when we push together all of this. We just get them to do codeless UI, go and call a REST endpoint. So that's on the reading and writing side. But if someone else goes and updates the blockchain, we have to react to it. So we have the event driven stuff on the other side. So again, this that was that serverless Oracle. From a serverless Oracle, push it into event grid. So the event grid, whatever it cares about, hands up, subscribe through PubSub. So if another member updates the orders for widgets, then the event comes up here, Oracle detects it, publishes it, and then we can go and update our backend SQL server. We can update Power BI reports, dashboarding, or we can go and trigger us another function to go and trigger our action process to go and start constructing widgets for someone requested it. So this one enterprise can go and build whatever they want, and it's inside of their infrastructure. But if you go and zoom out, then it looks like this. So one enterprise can do what they want, but because the blockchain is that shared state, that shared source of truth, now all the other enterprises just react off of that. So each of them can have whatever backend system that they want, but as long as this is a source of truth, everything works well. So again, the way that we go and teach them about this is it's all basic Ethereum fundamentals. What works here, we can then go and remix it, like the slides on the way, to say a B2C. So they can still do what they want with their key management, with their oracles, etc. But if they're doing a B2C app, they can still have consumers interacting with it. So we can do it in two different ways. The first way enterprises usually want to do it is, once we get past this point, they still usually want to control like the keys for the users. So it may have some mobile apps, etc. So the end users, once they log into OAuth or something, can go for the logic app to go and push in transactions, updates, etc. But the keys are stored here. So that's probably going to be step one as we migrate these enterprises across as they're getting more and more confident. And then hopefully we'll get up to something like this. We're using centralized IDs, the end customers using their own keys, so to say, okay, the enterprises still have all their stuff as it was. So again, everything we're teaching here is making sure that they're good. Enterprise devs, but also good public dApp devs. So once we start getting closer to rolling this out in production, then we start having to explore about a few things. So how to go and add members. So because we're usually using Quorum, that's usually accounted for us. So Quorum and Azure Blockchain Service has some great mechanisms there for how to go and add members in, vote for them, all the governance around that. But also on the development side, this is where it gets tricky. And we've actually released a white paper around how we some suggested ways enterprises can do this. If you do a search for Microsoft Blockchain DevOps white paper, then you can find it. So if you do have three companies, three, five, ten companies working together in this one consortium, how do we go and manage everything around updating the source code, updating smart contracts, deploying them out? We've got some things around the DevOps there. So we can do things like inside of Azure DevOps, whenever we have a pull request, we can say that we need to have an approval from each of the consortium members before that pull request is allowed to come in and update the source code. Same thing with deploying that out. We can go and have multi-sig wallet, so each of the consortium members have to go and sign off for that new deployment to go and happen. So we've got a bunch of examples, but here's one which is here local in Japan. So here in Japan, we're working with a couple of companies to create a new consortium. We've got Japan Rail East, Mizuho Bank, Japan Rail Information Services, some insurance companies, etc. So the idea here is enabling mobility as a service, trying to help customers get from point A to point B, but they'll go through multiple different service providers. As some of you may have seen while you've been in Japan, you may have had to go on Japan Rail, but then a Shinkansen, maybe Tokyo Underground, jump into a bus. So the idea here is having one system that end customers can end up using. And so the first prototype for this we got up and running in 3-4 days because we were using the VS Code extensions, we're scaffolding out all of the serverless applications here. You can see here, maybe not this in Japanese, but we've got ERC20 tokens, ERC721 tokens, because we're just using industry standards, Open Zeppelin, to go and scaffold those out for us. We're using the serverless oracles to go and detect when things were happening, so we can update the reports so we can show how many customers are using the tickets, etc. So there are many different ways to go and mash up these things. So here we've got the interconnect between Mizuho Bank's traditional backend systems. So they've got the open banking API to handle customer accounts. So how do we go and connect that in with the blockchain? So again, we use those serverless applications to allow customers to click something, do something serverless, which goes and updates ERC20 balances, etc., etc. So then we went back, and then in another 4 days, we went and smashed together another few scenarios. So again, we've got more ERC20, 721s, things happen. But again, everything we're doing here is helping make sure it's all blockchain fundamentals. So for example, up here, around key management, so we're looking around how can we do this with decentralized identity. But we want to make sure that the VIDs can be used in other places as well. So I've been very careful with what I've said because this is all still shush, but that picture, is in the official press release. So I'm allowed to talk about that, but not much more. Anything else I'm allowed to talk about? No, I don't want to get fired. So that was one customer example. So to show another way that we can smash these up. Yeah, we've still got 5 minutes. So another way to smash these up. So actually, we've done this pattern at a few customers now. If we've got high frequency IoT data coming in, so if we've got IoT devices sending in millions of transactions per second, how can we handle that and secure it? So we obviously can't put millions of transactions per second into a blockchain. So what we did was we wanted to help give auditors who came in after the fact confidence that the IT data hadn't been tampered with. What we ended up doing was we can having millions of IoT devices streaming in their data into what we call an event hub. So this can handle millions of transactions per second coming in. So it's kind of like a pub sub. All these millions of transactions, we stream out to immutable block storage. So this is all ISO standard stuff. So we show that IoT data has been persistent with immutable blobs, which is great while still inside my Azure subscription. But as soon as I try, and I can see that it hasn't been modified, but as soon as I try to share that raw data to an auditor, I could still modify it while it's in transit. So how can we make them confident around it? So we periodically, once it's in immutable block storage, it can't be changed. So we go and every minute or 10 minutes, whatever we want, go and take the hash of those millions of transactions which are sitting there and go anchor that into a blockchain somewhere. So we've actually gone and thrown that up onto GitHub. Here you go, stuff on GitHub. So we've got pictures, we've got source code, etc. But we just did this quickly, we threw it together. Next month, Microsoft, we're doing a little internal hackathon, so I'm going to get a few people to work with me to build out this documentation a little bit nicer. So we'll have some better quick start guides there. Now, all of the stuff that I just showed, so one really important link here. So we did the same talk at Truffle. So the link there is Truffle 2019. So if you go aka.ms/Truffle2019, you've got a lot of the core things that I just talked about here in a nice README file. So we've got everything that I've talked about, the core tenets of blockchain first development, pretty pictures that you can steal, some information about what the connectors are, links to VS Code extensions, etc. Let's bring that back up. So that's the important point there. Now with that, so Microsoft, we do have a vendor group. Which one's that on?
Basement?
There you go. So go down to the basement, you can go and talk to Microsoft. That sounds weird. Go down to the basement and speak with Microsoft about our core developer tools. But yeah, we're out of time, so thanks everyone.